The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey everyone, welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike here on the Shepherd Radio Network. Today I have Sean Sullivan as my guest. Sean's been up here before, but the last time you were here face-to-face, the studio was in a little bit different condition.
Yep, nothing but dust last time I was here, so this is a much, much different environment. Very professional, very nice.
Oh, yeah. What's that old saying? Excuse our dust, but expand we must. Yeah, something like that. Yep. Well, that's what it was. When you were literally face-to-face with us the first time, it would have been, I guess, in 2019.
I think so,
yeah. Yeah, and my goodness, the studios were under construction back then. Now they're beautiful and we love them. Yep. And you're here, although we're back in a time of battling this thing called COVID.
Right.
It is not fun. I know it's really made an impact on your ministry as
it
well.
It sure has, yeah.
But you lead Mission 823.
That's right.
And just for those listeners that may not be aware or haven't heard you on here before, mm-hmm. tell us a little bit about the name and the goal and the reach of this mission.
Sure, absolutely. Mission 823, most people, their first question is, what is the 823? That's not just a random cipher that we came up with.
It's not an area code.
No, yeah. And it's not a secret telephone number for, you know, dating or anything like that. The 823 comes from Psalms chapter 82, verses 3 and 4, where the Bible says, defend the poor and the fatherless, do justice to the afflicted and needy, and rescue them out of the hand of the wicked. And that's the work that we've been doing for well over 20 years now in Ukraine. And so 3.5 years ago, when we needed to incorporate and focus our attention exclusively on Eastern Europe and Ukraine, God gave us that. And that's the work that we've been doing with kiddos for that long period of time.
Now, how did this burden, which had to begin as a burden in your heart, I mean, you think about most of us that are in America, number one, there might not even ever be the thought to do something like what you're doing, to go to another country. Number two, it's a country so far away. I mean, it takes quite a bit of planning, quite a bit of effort, quite a bit of expense, even to make that trip one
sure.
time. What was it that caused you to have such a burden for this area?
Well, it's a really unusual story, and that's kind of how God works in my life. And I'm not sure if that's just because God likes to be capricious. I don't think he does. I think it's more the fact that I'm slow and hard-headed. And God teaches me everything the hard way, because that's what's necessary for me. I'm not slow on the uptake, but I do have to be transparent and say that my faith, while it has been stretched tremendously for the last 40 years plus in ministry, I sometimes doubt my capabilities. And because of that, I forget that it's not me that's doing it. It's God in the first place. And so,
I hate to break it to you, but yeah. I think there's a lot of us like that.
Yeah. Well, and so I think, the way that God works in my life is he calls me to do things that are so big and so impossible that I immediately crumple and say, yeah. I can't do that. And he says, perfect, you're ready.
Right.
And then we go forward. So I was serving on staff as the associate and children's pastor at a local church here in Orlando, Florida. And it was a answer to prayer, dream come true. We'd been praying for 10 years. I was in the Navy for 6 years, mm-hmm. worked for Lockheed Space Operations on the Kennedy Space Center Space Shuttle Program for another 4 years. And we're really frustrated because we didn't feel like we had opportunities to serve vocationally in ministry. And I was looking for that opportunity. Well, finally it came, and we were serving at a little church as lay people, and the pastor, and I was a deacon there, pastor came and asked us to serve on staff as the associate and children's pastor, and I said, yes, answer to prayer, absolutely. So for us, we're in a dream come true
mm-hmm,
situation.
Yeah. Everything you prayed for.
Everything we prayed for 10 years, wrestled with God, and it's all coming true. So we bought a little house, we had two little redheaded kids running around, and everything was perfect for about a year and a half.
And then God began stirring the nest.
began to teach me that he's not done casting vision and challenging my faith. And so while we were perfectly happy and content, he was stirring inside of me something that I began to wrestle with, and that was this word missions. It had to do with a compulsion, this feeling that I was supposed to be and our family was supposed to be involved in cross-cultural international ministry. And missions kept coming up over and over again. People that came to our church, people that I bumped into, it was just relentless. And God wouldn't let me go with this thing. And so all of this is going on. I'm really tormented and wrestling with God now because I said, this is perfect. You brought me here. Now what are you doing? You know, I didn't understand. And a guy walks up to me in the lobby and says, Sean, now we had lived overseas with the military and I've traveled all over the world. And I'd been saved since I was 8 years old. I've been walking with Jesus since I was a very young boy. Mm-hmm. And I had never been in all of my travels on a short-term mission trip in all of that time. And this guy walks up to me out of the blue, seemingly, you know, disconnected, and says, Sean, I'm taking a short-term mission trip to Ukraine. Do you want to go? And I said, yes, where's that? I had no idea where it was, what God was doing. I just knew that there was this undeniable sense that God was calling us to do something in the world of missions. I had no idea what that looked like. And so I said, there's an opportunity. I'm going to take it and explore and see what God's doing. Well, I got there and it was exactly what God was doing. We were there for 21 days. We were ministering with churches. We were doing evangelism in the, in the cities and villages. And we were distributing, distributing medical supplies that were donated to us to the hospitals around the Chernobyl area where that big accident was, the nuclear power accident. And so during that 21 days, God absolutely broke my heart for the people of the former Soviet Union, especially of Ukraine, for the language, for the culture, for the people and their hospitality, their brokenness, their brightness and their hospitality, their love. God just completely and absolutely enraptured my heart with the people of Ukraine. And so I came home from that trip and told my perfectly content, very much in love with her life, wife, we have to move to Ukraine and do ministry or I'm just going to die. And she said, what she has said to me every time I come up with some seemingly harebrained thing that comes from God, she said to me what the same thing she said for 36 years, Mike. She said, are you sure this is what God wants us to do? And I said, as sure as I'm breathing. She said, let's go.
Wow. So that's faith.
And she's always been that way. She's a very, very... We have a great relationship. We've been married for 36 years this past February, and she's followed me around the world and back again literally four times. One of the most beautiful and precious human beings on the face of the planet. I love my wife. She said, let's go. And so we sold our house in Ocoee, and we moved to Texas. I didn't have a job. I didn't have any support for college.
And you resigned that dream job that you had, the one you'd waited for.
I had to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think of that, I had to leave everything. All of our family, my wife's family is all in Orlando. I'm a Louisiana boy and I met my wife here in Orlando 37 years ago. So I'm asking her to leave everything again, cause we just came back from Japan. So leave everything that's home and go again. And she said, yes. So we moved to Texas. And we didn't have a house, didn't have a job, didn't have any funding to go to school. And we just, in faith, we just went to Texas and God arranged everything. We had jobs waiting for us in ministry at churches, right? We were able to stay on the campus of Arlington Baptist University and continue doing ministry there. And God provided scholarships for all of our schooling. Mm-hmm. It was just an incredible transformation to watch how I was completely petrified to step out because I had no idea what was going on. And then that first step, you find God's there and everything's provided for.
Now, part of that schooling, did that involve learning the language of the Ukraine?
No, as a matter of fact, this was pastoral theology and a missions minor, and got my Bachelor of Science at Arlington Baptist University, and language study was not part of that at all. Mm-hmm. Language study came on the field. When we arrived in Kiev, Ukraine, I knew the alphabet and did not know how to speak a single word. And so we were starting from absolute scratch.
Yeah, niet. Yeah.
Niet.
that's about it in my vocabulary.
Я вообще ничего не понимаю.
You do that well, man. That's awesome.
Yeah
I can't. I just can't even imagine what it's like. You've got this position that you've longed for 10 years. You're working, you're happy, and then you take this trip. And I think it is just amazing what one time away. It was a 3-week time, so that's a long trip. But one mission trip did so much to change your whole worldview about what you're going to be doing for the next segment of your life, large segment of your life.
It did. And I would say that God instrumentally used a short-term mission trip to literally change our life and trajectory. And I've seen that happen. We can talk about this a little bit later, but I've seen that happen in the lives of hundreds of people who have come to the field with us, because now I know the power of short-term mission, and we've had hundreds and hundreds, thousands of volunteers that have come and served with us on the field, and it changes their lives in the same way.
Really does. Yeah. I look back and I think some of the most amazing things that have happened to me on missions trips always leave me thinking, number one, how glad I was that I came. With all the trouble and all of the hassle and sacrifice of money, et cetera, it's all worth it. Number one, I'm just really glad I took the trip. Number two, undeniably, I'm the one that was blessed the most. I went there to share. I went there to give and to help. But I feel like, as great as maybe some of the efforts that we put out, I'm the one that was blessed the most. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, and not to diminish the service of volunteers that go on short-term mission, because quite frankly, and we're just being honest, if you don't know the language, you don't understand the culture, and you don't have any contacts there, you're going there to serve the best way that you know how, but your impact is going to be minimal unless you stay for the long term and you learn culture and language and build relationships and all those kinds of things. But the benefit is, you get to cross-culturally interact with people, in a different country. You get to demonstrate your very real and genuine love for them, and they understand and receive that. And you get to participate in a small part in ministry. But the bigger takeaway for almost 100% of participants in short-term mission is they learn more about God and themselves with God and take away more from the people on the field that they're serving than what they're giving. And the benefit is that they get to shape their God story and come back and tell the story of other individuals, be their ambassadors and their advocates, and speak for them for people who are in need. And it's just a great symbiosis. It's a great mutually beneficial, relationship. They do real service in ministry, and they take away a lot that they can use to help other people. And so it's a great opportunity.
You mentioned you worked over in the Cape for a while, over in the Titusville area and all of that. The launch pads of Cape Canaveral always just amaze me. Every time I've seen a launch, but I think now of a different type of launch where you take this trip and God launches an entire new vision for you. And that thing is going up and it's going to go successfully because this is a God thing. This is not an idea that Sean, you had your idea met.
Yeah.
You had your goals met.
Yeah, and it was pretty small. I mean, it was a great opportunity and we were doing great ministry. I'm not downplaying or diminishing our role as an associate at a small church in Orlando. There was great impact there and God was using us. However, God had much different and bigger, not better, but just different and bigger plans for our lives. And that was a great training ground for us. Most of what I began to learn about how to interact with people in vocational ministry, I learned at that first little church.
And that is very common, and it's so needed. And again, that you're right. This is not in any way to denigrate the importance of a role like that, because many of us who spent many years in ministry never did what you're doing and served out our years. I did that in local churches, and that's a wonderful calling, and it's a wonderful blessing to be able to do that. But it is in the heart of God that I think of Acts 1, where he tells his disciples the uttermost parts of the world, and surely Kiev and Ukraine had to feel to you like the uttermost parts of the world.
It was a pretty good distance away. The unusual part about that when I first went was this idea when a gentleman by the name of Jack Sawyer, he was a used car salesman and had a body shop here in Orlando, and he's a great Christian gentleman. He's long gone now. Cancer took him years ago, but he was the guy that introduced me to international missions on a short-term mission trip and Ukraine, and he introduced me to this whole thing. And, you know, just the ability to invest in my life like that, I don't take that lightly. The investment that the church made in me and teaching me and training me and giving me opportunity to serve other people, I don't take that lightly at all. Just a tremendous pouring into me and my family and our spirit. And I'm forever grateful for every single partner that we have currently. You know, this is a missions is a relationship that requires a lot of team members to get mm-hmm. it done. It's not just me and my wife. It's hundreds and hundreds of people who are serving together with us.
You know, you're thinking about a missions organization that you lead now, and this is something that really you've built from the ground floor. This is not something that you came in and took over another ministry, but that one missions trip. And in a moment in segment two, I want you to tell us what it was that you saw. If you can think back to that first 3-week trip to the Ukraine, to tell us what some of the motivations. Yeah. I just can only imagine looking in the eyes of the kids that you were serving on that trip. That had to be really just an amazing, amazing thing. But then, you know, you hear it involves a trip like that involves so much preparation. It involves a great deal of faith from the standpoint of you don't know what you're going. And I bet a lot of our listeners would not even realize that when they hear the word Ukraine, because when we think of Kiev, when we think of Chernobyl and all of that happened there, it was not tied so much back then to Ukraine as it was the Soviet Union.
Right.
But and we know that whole area, the Soviet bloc countries, a lot of changes since Chernobyl.
Yep. And changes that have reversed. It's been an unusual period of time since 1991, 92, when the Soviet Union was falling apart and all of those countries regained and declared their independence. Mm-hmm. Ukraine has always existed for more than 1,200 years. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been Christian evangelical pastors and churches in Ukraine before, hundreds of years before America existed.
Right.
You know, it's a rich, ancient culture. And when the Soviet Union fell apart, these nations declared their independence and began to move towards independence. Well, for some reason, almost all of the nations to the east of Ukraine, most of them that end in stan, like Kazakhstan, mm-hmm. Uzbekistan, yeah. Tajikistan,
sure.
Turkmenistan, all of those stans, the former Soviets, the Russians, and Belarus, have all reverted back to closing the doors to Christian ministry and opportunity and Western thought in lieu of receiving more of a communist, atheist, Muslim, socialist type of an environment. And Ukraine has held steadfast to opening the doors to the gospel of Jesus Christ and opening the doors and moving towards a free market economy with a constitutional republic.
Wow.
You know, people with their own voted parliament and president. And so they're moving towards freedom and independence, whereas the rest of the world is closing down. So Ukraine is really strategic right now.
That is an amazing reality that the doors are open there when all of the other neighboring countries around have shut it back down again.
Yeah.
And you don't hear a lot about that either, but that is the way it is, I'm afraid. My guest today is Sean Sullivan from Mission 823. We'll be back with Sean in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd.
Listen, we all know in business nowadays, one of the hardest things to get right is your social media advertising. We all struggle with this, right? Trying to get content, good content at that, always struggling with your phone, never understanding the settings, and then when you finally post the picture or video, it looks terrible. Well, I'm about to let you in on a little secret in how to make this problem simply go away. I'm talking about Boundless Drone Services. Let me tell you, Boundless Drone Services takes away all the stress. Brian and his team are ready to help you create awesome video content of your next corporate event, training, or educational video. Or maybe you'd like to do what we did at Mark Radio and have them highlight the wonderful team that you have working for you. At Boundless Drone Services, they really can do it all. Contact them today at 407-601-2438 or go directly to their website at boundlessdroneservices.com to see how they can help you take your business to the next level in marketing.
Happy to be in the studio today with Sean Sullivan from Mission 823. I met Sean back in 2019. I think it was my first ever Christian chamber meeting at First Baptist Church. And we walked in back in that time frame when we were meeting at First Baptist. They had like an expo room that would have been there before the lunch meeting. So it'd be like going to a conference and being in a big expo floor. And all of these ministries lined all around the room. And Sean was the very first table that I walked up to. Mm-hmm. And Mission 823, what's that? And I got to meet Sean, and wasn't long thereafter, you're up here. And boy, this ministry to the Ukraine. Yeah. I love the story and the history that you've just given us, because there have been so many changes. And if you owned a world map or a globe prior to 1990, and then you look at it in 1995, all those countries look different.
Yeah, completely.
But the Ukraine was there.
Yeah. Yeah. Ukraine. And this is I'm not scolding you, but Ukrainians will take great care to remind you that we say Ukraine and not the Ukraine.
Ah,
and that article, that little article, the, for some reason, is, well, there are reasons behind it. They tie that very strongly back to Soviet ownership, as in the Socialist Soviet Republic of Ukraine. And they say, we are Ukraine. We're not the, we don't belong to anybody.
To all Ukrainians, I offer my most humble apology. I am so sorry. I did not know that.
No offense taken, but they would remind you we're not the Ukraine.
We are Ukraine.
Yeah, we are Ukraine. That's right. Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. An article like that makes a big difference to a lot of people.
To them, it really does. Yeah. Because they are proud of their long heritage, long before the Soviet Union developed. They're proud of the fact that, and Russia would disagree, and you'll see writings about this and debates about the, you know, the origins of Ukraine. The Russians would say that Ukraine was born out of Russia, but we know from history that Russia, Moscow, was actually born out of those who left Kiev and Rus. In ancient days. And so Russia was actually born out of Ukraine, not the other way around.
Well, and you know, history and revisionists will always try to get the story wrong, if you will.
That's right.
If they're revisionists, and we're seeing that happen in our own country today in a major way.
Sure, all the time.
Yeah, all the time, all the time. So I set this up in the last segment, and I would love for our listeners, I would love myself to hear what it was on that first missions trip that so directly impacted your heart to the degree that you came back home and began to lay out for your wife what God had said, what the vision would be for the next segment of your life.
Right. You know, when it many people would assume that, because I guess at the time some would have classified Ukraine as a third world country. I didn't believe that. I never have. It's always been in my mind a rapidly developing nation, and they're in a much different position now than they were 25 years ago when I was first there. So they're very rapidly developing now. So it wasn't the poverty. I had seen that all over the world, traveled all over Southeast Asia. We lived in southern Japan and were deployed with the military in the Philippines and in South Korea and Thailand and Vietnam and Cambodia and places all over the world. And we had seen poverty. It wasn't that, although there was a lot of economic difficulty, struggles in Ukraine when we were there. You know, the first thing that captured my heart was meeting a young lady. Her name was Larissa. And through all of the, you know, difficulties of travel to Ukraine this very first time, things were a lot different then. The airport was pretty ragged. You know, they didn't even turn the lights on when we were there. It was pretty sparse, you know. It stunk, you know, when we got there. The airport was just not the most beautiful place. And so that was kind of our first impression experience. And then hard travel, no air conditioning, all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, for Americans, we're pretty spoiled and we're used to, you know, a little nicer situation. And when we got there, it was just, we were tired and it was dirty and, you know, the lights were off. And
how long did it take to fly there?
Altogether, it's 9 hours over the Atlantic, but altogether with the connecting flights, it's probably 15 or 16 hours of actual flight time. By the time you get there, you've been up for over 24 hours.
And you're greeting people in an environment that is anything but enticing.
It wasn't the most attractive place at the time. However, I will say, if you fly into Kyiv-Borispol now, you will imagine that you're in Western Europe at the Frankfurt Airport or in Amsterdam or in Paris. It's one of the most beautiful little airports in the world. God's just done amazing things in the country and allowed them to do that.
Yeah. Political freedom does a lot, doesn't it?
And financial freedom. Spiritual freedom. Because Christianity and the freedom and the liberty that Christ gives us impacts the character of men nationwide and helps them to see liberty in all areas of life. And so, but when I first got there, our first impression was, oh, this is going to be tough. And nobody would smile on the street. Nobody would look you in the eye. And we're riding in these vehicles that are pretty beat down and it's hot and sweaty and we're tired. And then I was introduced to this young lady. Her name was Larissa. And Larissa is a dear, dear friend to this day. She's helped us over the years with so many things. But she was the first person in Ukraine that looked me in the eye and smiled at us and said, Jesus loves you. She was the first Christian that we met in Ukraine. And that brightened my spirit and really helped me to understand, okay, we're not just going to struggle here. There are people here that, you know, that will receive us and allow us to work with them. So Larissa greeted us and I began to talk with her about her struggles, very, very difficult past. We won't get into all of her details. She had a really, really difficult past that God redeemed her from. And she began to tell us that story. And we're looking around at the lives of other people who, there's no evidence of God or Christ in their life. And we see this one bright, shining light of a person telling us about the testimony of Jesus saving her and redeeming her and restoring her in Ukraine. And that gave me a glimmer of hope that, you know, there's some person here, there's something that we can work with. And so as we traveled around the country, we were working with some local pastors and doing some street evangelism. And there was this sense of extreme curiosity and extreme hunger to hear the words that we were speaking from the Bible. As we went from meeting to meeting, people would gather mostly out of curiosity, but then they would stay when we began to talk about God and the reason why he created them to have relationship with him and the way that that relationship has been broken and the way that he allowed through his gift of Jesus Christ that relationship to be restored. And people began to gather and they intently listened with a hunger. We passed out Bibles and were almost completely swarmed by people just striving to get a copy of the Word of God. This is shortly after, just a few years after the fall of the Soviet Union. And so the scriptures were limited. You know, there was very little access. They were hard to come by. The economy was decimated, so they couldn't buy Bibles. So passing out Bibles in crowds, they were so hungry to receive those things. And it just touched my heart that there are people that we've been serving for, you know, I was saved when I was 8 years old and been using the gift of evangelism that God gave us, you know, the calling of evangelism to tell people our story about what God's done in our life and how they can have a relationship with God all my life. And I'd never seen that kind of a response to the gospel message before. And it just pricked my heart because two things were happening. Number one, that was an amazing response that I'd never seen before. But tied to that was this sense of understanding that this is directly tied to something that God is calling me to do in my life. And so I was putting those two things together. God called me here for a reason, and look how these people are responding. And that meeting with Larissa giving us hope that the entire country's not, you know, dark and dismal and depressed and non-engaged and unhospitable. Of course, we found out later that that's a cultural nuance that we needed to understand. And that part of culture still exists today. When you're walking down the street, people don't look in the eye, don't smile at you. They don't say, hey, how you doing? They just don't. They don't do that culturally. And it's kind of a self-defense mechanism. You know, they've been oppressed for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so there's a self-defense mechanism, a quiet, you know, mind your own business kind of a culture. But if you sit down with somebody in their home and they will offer you a cup of tea or coffee, and what that means is an entire 23-course spread, right? When they say, would you like coffee in Ukraine, that means we're going to eat for 3 days. Because
oh, that'd be great for me right there.
Yeah, it's terrific.
I love coffee, and so, well, bring it on.
the other part that really drew me to love the Ukrainian people almost immediately was this idea that when you're walking down the street, you feel this kind of coldness, this distance. But as soon as you sit down in somebody's home and they literally pull everything they own out to show you the grandest hospitality you've ever experienced, you know it's coming from the depth of their soul.
Right.
You just feel the love and the hospitality. That hospitality culture is not just among Christians. That's the entire nation and the entire region, the entire region of Eastern Europe. You know, the former Soviet states, they all share that same hospitality culture. Everything in Ukraine and those parts of the world are based around relationships and around hospitality. And you can't get anything done anywhere in the region without relationships and hospitality. It's not like a business transaction where you can just say, hey, do this for me and I'll pay you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Relationships are really, really critical to doing work and ministry of any kind in that part of the world. And so that part really just really enamored my heart with the people and the culture and everything else, the language. It was just, captured my heart.
One trip, again, all of that happens, and going to Ukraine changed everything for Sean. But, you know, sometimes it's not even just the changes that are happening in your heart. It's God doing something. I'm sure when you left, he was already preparing the people that you were going to now be joining with, linking arms with. The Lord just puts all of this together in both locations. Back home, you're going to be leaving Florida to go to Texas for a while to get your education, get everything ready. All of this is coming together. The Lord is just a mastermind. Yeah. He does so many wonderful things.
And, you know, the distinction I like to make is because many times when we talk to people about doing ministry like this or of any type that requires some extent of faith, you know, there's a lot of fear about what's going to happen. Can I really do this? And like I said before, God always confronts me with things that are so big that I know immediately I can't do this. And he does that to me on purpose to put me and my pride in my place so that he can say, oh, I know you can't do anything, but watch me work. And if you'll trust me, you'll see it. And I say, okay, I'm ready. So when people talk about a calling, most of the time, if you engage people and get them to follow that to its fullest conclusion, what they really mean by that is ascending, to be sent somewhere. So when somebody says, I was called to go to Africa, what they really think in their hearts is God is sending me there and I'm kind of all by myself. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't say that out loud. If you press them on it, they would say, oh, no, God's there. But they feel as if I'm being sent by God and I'm going to do this work. But a calling means just like if I were looking at you from a distance, you're 50 feet away, and I said, Mike, come over here. Where am I? Mm-hmm. I'm already wherever it is I'm calling you to. When God has a calling on your life, not only is he already there where he wants you to go, whether it's across the street, across the nation, or across the world, when God calls you, he's calling you to himself where he is and where he has already been working since eternity past.
That's well said.
So all of the connections, all of the resources, everything that you need or you think you're going to need, God's already aware of and prepared for and set up people and begun to work in their hearts for all of those things long before we ever get there. So the first step is really the hardest, and that's the realization that God's calling me. He's already there. I'm just going to go join him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that gives you great comfort, especially for a guy like yourself who you've not done something like this before. Yeah. You've not led a missions organization before, right. Started one from scratch, I might add.
Yeah.
You're there and you see it and that calling happens. And, you know, this is the beautiful thing that I think so many people who did grow up in church in America, they feared oftentimes worship or missions conferences because they didn't want to be called.
Right.
They wanted to grow up in America. They wanted to live their lives in America. They didn't want to go to Africa or Ukraine. Sorry, right. I almost did it again over Ukraine. They didn't want to go to a Soviet bloc country.
Yeah.
They wanted to stay in America. But here's the thing. If God is in that, if it's God's will for that person to do it, I have found this to be true. They would not be happy anywhere else.
You will never be satisfied as a believer who is filled with the Holy Spirit and led by the Holy Spirit. That's why years ago when I knew that I was supposed to be in vocational ministry and I was wrestling with working 100 hours a week and driving 3 hours a day from Ocoee to go to the Space Center and there were no opportunities for me to enter into ministry vocationally, I was wrestling with God and I said to him, I said, and I'm surprised I haven't been struck by lightning multiple times because I have these open, transparent conversations with God, but he's big enough to take it and he wants me to communicate with him. But I said, listen, God, I know you've called me to ministry vocationally, not just as a layperson, not that that's really a term, but for distinction, I wasn't vocationally serving. So I know you've called me to this. So either open the door of opportunity for me to serve or take it away because I'm going insane. And so if you're a believer who is filled by the Spirit and led by the Spirit, right, and God is calling you to do something that's outside of what we're normally used to or what we're even comfortable with or capable of, then you will never be satisfied until you trust God and follow him no matter what happens. And so we said, my wife and I said years ago, 36 years ago, we will do as much as it terrifies us, as much as a mystery as it's going to be, as much of an adventure, as much hardship as we might imagine or anticipate. We will do whatever God wants us to do wherever he wants us to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we surrendered to that and laid that at the altar before God. And he answered and, you know, and called it. He doesn't call everybody to do that.
No.
But he does honor your heart of surrender to be willing to do whatever he calls, because that demonstrates trust in somebody who's really and completely wholly trustworthy.
I think you've given us a really great definition of the call of God and how that works and why it is so important that we all really pay attention to that. And we'll hear more in the next segment here on Afternoons with Mike with Sean Sullivan, who is with Mission 823, Ministry to Ukraine. We'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. This is The Shepherd. Hey, we all know in business that one of the hardest things to really get right is your social media advertising. We all struggle with this, but I'm here to tell you a little secret that will make the problem simply go away. Boundless Drone Services. They take away all the stress. Brian Fay and his team are ready to help you create awesome video content of your next corporate event, training, or educational video. Boundless Drone Services. Contact them today. BoundlessDroneServices.com. Time always flies by when I'm with Sean Sullivan from Mission 823. His ministry to Ukraine always has been an inspiration to me. I think about, you know, part of it is just realizing the complexity of the details that had to fall into place as God was calling Sean, as he talked about in our last segment. But those complexities are nothing to God. God works all of that out. He did that in your life. He's given you people that when you were on that first trip, you saw, you were able to see, you connected, even though some of the outside trappings of what greeted you would not have been up to American standards of, let's say, invitation or desirability, but the heart of God was there.
Yeah.
And now that you're there, you work a lot with kids, you work with street kids, you work with children who are orphans. Yep. Tell us about that.
Well, we were living and working in Kyiv, Ukraine. My wife and my two children, we had just arrived and began to explore whatever it was that God wanted us to do there. We're working with some local church leadership. We set up a couple of house church mission points that later evolved into churches. But that didn't turn out to be the main reason why God had us in Ukraine. I got a phone call from a lady who asked me to drive her to the graduation ceremony for an orphanage, and that caught me off guard. I didn't really know how to process those two things together, graduation and orphanage. I'd never really thought about the end of your life at an orphanage and what that means. So what that means is just like kind of like our foster care system here in the States, eventually when children get to a certain age, they age out of the state system, and then they have to move on. Well, in the United States, that's at 18 years old when you're classified as an adult, and there are support systems and programs and stipends and things, programs to be able to support you so that you can kind of transition your life. And although foster care is a very difficult situation without a without a natural family that's your blood family, it's a difficult transition. But there are programs and systems and support and people around you to help you to make that transition, and you're an adult.
Right.
In Ukraine, the orphanage systems of Ukraine, after the completion of ninth grade, these kids are 15, 16 at the most, and they age out of the system. And when she said graduation ceremony for an orphanage, she meant these children at 15 years old are going to walk out of this orphanage after living there for a number of years, possibly their whole life. They have no family. They have no support. They have no money. They have no education, and they have no opportunity for any of those. And they're going to walk out into the street.
Oh my goodness.
There are some trade school type of situations that they try to arrange, but the dormitories where they live are under par. They're typically, you know, exploitative, and the kids get about $10 a month or so to survive on. You can't survive anywhere in the world on 33 cents a day. I mean, you just can't do it. And so these dormitories and trade school situations turn into big dens of partying and drugs and girls, and, you know, it's just a really bad place to grow up, and certainly no place where you can get an education. So that's kind of the environment that these kids were graduating into. Well, this little orphanage, Komarivka, which means kind of like mosquito town, I guess you'd translate that, up in northern Ukraine, 2 hours north of, 2.5 hours north of Kyiv, near Belarus, about 150 kids living in abject poverty, broken down facilities. This is equivalent to Quebec, Canada in latitude, I guess. And so very cold 8 months out of the year or so. And our gut instinct was, this is a humanitarian nightmare. These kids are living in squalor. They had no running water. They had no hot water. They had no heat in this cold environment. They had no showers, no toilets inside for 150 kids, some of them mobility impaired. The nearest outhouse, multi-hole outhouse without stall partitions, you know, just a really difficult
kind of basic
commercial situation. So walking through the snow, you know, in the dark, it was just a really bad situation. No indoor plumbing that was operational. So we started working on the humanitarian side of things, and then very quickly realized, you know what, the reason why we came here was because these kids are leaving to go into the world by themselves. And so we
at age 15.
Right, right. My kids currently couldn't survive, you know, at that stage of their life. And so we started working on the humanitarian side of things, and then slowly expanding our capabilities to try to support these kids as much as possible for their whole life, because they never have anyone that can support them so that they can grow up in a normal, healthy life situation and then have opportunities to succeed. So what we found out later on was that this one little orphanage was not the only one. that in a country about the size of the state of Texas, that there are more than 750 of these facilities, all total to date. It's changed over the years a little bit, but altogether, about 110,000 children in these orphanages right now. And we determined, listen, we've got to do something to provide for these children. So we backed up our little humanitarian program and kind of developed an all-encompassing whole life support system that includes support for kids in crisis. And when you read that little acronym, O-R-P-H-A-N-S, in our brochure, ORPHANS, it stands for orphans, refugees. There's a war in Ukraine. We'll talk about that. Poverty-stricken kids, human trafficking victims, abused, neglected, and street kids. So my wife came up with that. Amy, thank you very much. So ORPHANS is an acronym that covers basically all of the at-risk categories of kids that we serve. So the first stage of our program, if you want to call it that, or our approach, is to meet these kids in crisis. We do that a lot through youth camps that are, by the way, served by volunteers that come from all over the world.
Now explain for a moment what you mean when you say we meet them in crisis.
So we will, and it's not hard to discover who these kids are and where they are. We work with social services, with local churches, with our volunteer teams, with our paid staff, and there are children everywhere in need, so it's not difficult to find them. But what we do is in the communities where they live, either in the village that's impoverished or social services, dysfunctional families, or in the orphanages, or children who are living in inside the conflict zone, the war with Russia that's ongoing, or they're refugees from the war. You know, they're abused, they're neglected kids, exploited kids. All of those kids are identified by different assets or different partners that we have in Ukraine, and we build relationships with them primarily through direct contact in the village or through youth camps that we're hosting. There's one going on in Ukraine right now with a German team. We have multiple nations that come over and help us with short-term missions. And so it's a multilingual, cultural, you know, heyday when they're all there. And so we identify these kids, try to assess their needs, and try to point them in a direction that will be helpful for them to try to cope with, deal with, and find healing for the trauma that they've experienced and hopefully get the tools they need to succeed. And so that's how we begin to work with those kiddos.
Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine going into an area and seeing just, you know, I can't even imagine what kind of prep these orphanages are giving these kids as they approach age 15 or whatever, and they're going to age out. Right. And, you know, what must be going on in the lives of in the minds of these kids as they realize that tonight I'm staying at a place where I've been for the last 10 plus years or more.
Right.
And tomorrow I'm going to be walking out of the doors to squalor.
Yeah. So, you know, I've, as an ordained minister and being in ministry for a long time, I've spoken at multiple commencement ceremonies where, you know, we're encouraging the young people because it's the first day of opportunity of the rest of their life and they have so much potential in front of them. Well,
not so there. Yeah. It doesn't feel that way anyway.
In Eastern Europe, when a child is aging out of an orphanage at 15 years old, they're feeling trapped. You know, feeling like it's the end of their life, like it's the end of the road for them, that all roof over my head and any support that I could have known is ending and I'm going to be scrapping for survival on my own. That's their mentality. It's a tearful day. It's not something that we're looking forward to going to Harvard.
Yeah, you know? Even emotionally, I mean, it would almost be like leaving your family as well, because that's the only family they've known.
All their brothers and sisters, and if you know, they have good relationships with the staff at the orphanage, then it's like their aunties and their uncles.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's the only family they've ever known. And these are tough kids. You know, they're hardened by lack of necessary supervision. The ratios of teacher to, you know, to student or resident is very, very low. The level of education is not up to par. They're 3 to 4 years behind in grade level, you know, in their education. And so they've got a lot of catching up to do. And it's a pretty scrappy world that they live in where it's, you know, there's not a lot of supervision. So a lot of things go on during the day and throughout the course of the night where they've got to learn some survival skills. These are tough kids. You know, they're street smart, they're streetwise. And so segueing right into normal culture and society is something that they find difficult because they've never been taught.
So how does Mission 823 come in to help them?
Well, we come and have build relationships in the orphanages, in the villages, in the communities where we serve, and we just pour our lives into loving these kids. Our first goal, and this is the words of our director in Ukraine, I said, what's your first priority when we're exposed to these children? He said, to teach them how to be children again. Because at 8 years old or at 7 years old or at 10 years old, they've been required to live mm-hmm. the life of self-sustenance, right? To sustain themselves, to take care of themselves and their siblings. They've been adults since they were very young children.
Yeah.
So our first goal is to help them to relax and take all the pressure off and just be children again. And then we work to try to bring them through the tools that they need to find restoration, healing, trauma specialists, PTSD, you know, finding the education that they need, finding the humanitarian assistance, you know, normal living situation. But we're involved in all kinds of other things as well. With our youth camps, we sponsor family homes for adoptive and guardian families, kind of like the foster care system or an adoptive family. We build.
So this would be post-orphanage then?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's really, that's the point, is that you're helping kids not only get prepared for that day when they leave the orphanage, but helping them once they're out.
Yeah, absolutely. And we stay with them like family. It's not a program where we say, okay, you were here for 3 years, you're 18, you have to go now. These are our kids. And so we take the stance that we're family and we support these kids through whatever it takes to get them to independence. One of the major obstacles to our work that really we fight against strongly. We work with the office of representatives from the Office of the President of Ukraine, with the national justice system, with the Attorney General, with the National Police of Ukraine, is fighting exploitation, child sexual abuse mm-hmm. material online and live exploitation of children and human trafficking in Ukraine. So we're building initiatives and programs with our partners to try to fight human trafficking in Ukraine. More than one third of all online, we'll just say it this way, inappropriate material involving children and their abuse comes from Ukraine, Belarus, and Russia.
Oh, my goodness.
One third of the volume in the world. And so that's a huge problem for us and the exploitation of children. So we fight strongly against that and try to help the kids as well.
That sounds like that's the epicenter of it then. My goodness, it's just amazing. And you can be involved with Sean. Maybe as a one of those people that would go along on a trip, because things, thankfully, have opened back up some for travel now.
Yeah, there's plenty of opportunities. Sure, I've been back and forth in COVID, been back and forth multiple times, and mm-hmm. so we regularly engage volunteer teams. So you guys can find us online at mission823.com. You can find us on Facebook at mission823 and on Instagram and at Mission 823 Inc.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. I hope people really take us up on this and join with you. And of course they can support the efforts as well financially.
Sure.
And all of that information is there as well at the website, right?
It is. We're a Florida nonprofit and a federal 501c3. And so all donations are tax exempt. And you can donate directly through the website at mission823.com or send a check, if you'd like to our post office box.
Oh, my goodness. Any trips coming up in the next little bit?
In the next month or so, we'll be taking cyber professionals, in other words, digital forensics investigators and specialists, to help train the local police of Ukraine with the new equipment that we're fixing to purchase them for fighting.
This is a wonderful ministry, friends, and I so appreciate you coming in, Sean. This will be only until next time.
Yeah.
So this is an ongoing work to Ukraine that is so needed and appreciated. And we love you, brother. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate the opportunity to tell the story.
You got it. And we'll see you next time here on Afternoons with Mike on The Shepherd.